Hello and welcome to Pitchside with Toby Reynolds, a Sports Gazette podcast, where each episode we take a deep dive into a new sporting topic with a new guest. I'm your host Toby, and this week I'll be joined by Dan Jadzevic to discuss cricket content creation and the growth of the R Cricket brand. Dan is the creator of the R Cricket YouTube channel with over 400,000 subscribers, as well as being a podcast host, cricket commentator and content creator. Throughout this episode, we look at how Dan first got into cricket, his YouTube influences and his first commentating gig at Northamptonshire over the summer, as well as some of his predictions for the England vs India Test Series. I'm now joined by Dan from R Cricket. It's great to have you on, Dan.
Thanks for having me, mate. I'm looking forward to it. I've just got in through the door and podcast mode activated.
Just turning it on like a pro.
I don't know about that.
But yeah, let's jump right in. I think obviously you're most well known for being a content creator in the cricket world. How did you first get into cricket? Because I think I'm right in saying you were quite late in the cricket world.
Yeah, you know a little bit about what's going on here. I was one of those Ashes 2005 kind of babies, I guess. I'd barely, apart from like playing a bit of muckabout stuff in the back garden with my dad and my brother, I'd barely done any cricket as a kid. I'd played different sports, done different things, and I think I was meant to be studying for my GCSEs at that point. So you can work out kind of my age from that. And because it was on Channel 4, what I thought was clearly the more sensible thing to do, instead of revising trigonometry or the periodic table or something, I would sit there and watch the Ashes on the TV instead. And looking back on it, and when you think about what cricket is like now, it's a really kind of strange way to think about the fact, oh, I got picked up on this sport by watching Test cricket that now no one likes. 2005, and I think it was then the winter nets in the following year, so it would have been winter 2006 that I would have gone and joined my first club, so to speak. And I didn't have a childhood, which might show in some of the videos.
What was it most that interested you about cricket when you sort of first started watching?
Do you know what? Even from a complete novice, uninterested person, that 2005, that it just felt so special. Even someone that I didn't know who really these people were. Like, I didn't really know who Kevin Peterson was. I didn't really know who Shane Warne was. Didn't know who Ponting, Langer, Hayden, etc. But I think like it was broadcast and it was conveyed by the commentary in such an enticing and gripping way that it couldn't help but kind of inspire me as a 16-year-old to kind of think this sport is incredible. And to think that I kept turning it on again, and all those characters as well, like Freddie, the Flintoff character, the Brett Lee character, Warne, I mean, was a huge character. It was really difficult not to watch it and not to kind of fall in love with, I guess, almost like the romance of the sport rather than the actual kind of the technicalities and the traditions and things like that. It must have been that.
And I mean, cricket, as you mentioned, sort of Test cricket is no longer the biggest, probably not the biggest side of cricket anymore. T20 has been growing massively. I mean, the 100 is now the biggest competition probably in the UK. How do you think that new fans are being attracted as it sort of shifted from Test to the 100?
That's a great question. Do you know what? If I had an answer, I reckon I'd be employed by the ECB and working on the 100. But do you know what? I think the way that the ECB have gone about it, particularly with the 100 and that focus on the family aspect of it, I think is incredibly important. I think cricket, when you think about the stereotypes as to why certain groups don't particularly want to get involved in sport, I think cricket builds so many bridges, or has the ability to build so many bridges. When I was at school, when I did GCSEs, we learned about things in PE, and it was like, oh, well, girls don't want to play sport because they don't want to wear shorts or whatever. And that was genuinely what was being discussed in textbooks at that point. But then you don't have those issues with cricket. And I think actually the family aspect of it is a bit of a throwback to when someone like my dad used to play cricket, and he used to sit there and kind of go, yeah, we used to turn up on a Sunday afternoon and the whole village would turn out and watch us, and all the partners would come and the kids would come and they'd all play and everybody would turn up. So I kind of feel like it's a step almost back in time, but I think actually it's quite a progressive step forward.
Have you noticed a sort of change in viewership on your content that as the 100 has become more popular and even sort of was created only 3 years ago now, that there's almost been an uptake in kids? Or do you think that that's always been a love there and it's never really had sort of a format to blossom?
YouTube's a funny one. So if you're under the age of 18, you have to create an account which says you're over the age of 18. Otherwise, you can't watch certain types of content on YouTube. I.e., I would imagine the Sidemen, they like swearing quite a lot. And I think that's probably kind of gate kept away from those under 18. So actually the analytics with regards to age is a little bit misleading, I think, when it comes to YouTube. I think there's a lot of people watching YouTube that are under the age of 18 that actually are saying they are over the age of 18. So I don't really know. But one thing that I think, and it's never really been huge numbers, but one thing that has seen a kind of a slow increase has actually been the number of female viewers on the channel on Instagram. When you look into the demographics and the analytics on those couple of platforms, actually the percentage of views coming from the female cricket fan is increasing. It's still not comparable to the male views, but it really is growing, which is so exciting. And I think the 100's done a brilliant job at developing women's cricket, professional cricketers in the UK, and creating household names that probably wouldn't have existed 3 years ago.
Joe Gardner is sort of part of the R Cricket channel. Has she spoken much about it, and what's her sort of opinion on the 100? Because I've heard a few mixed opinions about sort of women's cricket through the 100, whether it's almost focusing too much on that sort of top level and creating a new format, but also it's now giving them a platform to be front and center alongside the men.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll have to tap her up and get her on the podcast, and then you can kind of ask her directly. But I think having spoken to her, it was, I suppose it was kind of a career that was still a little bit vocational, if that makes sense. It wasn't ever really enough to kind of be, oh, I'm a full-time professional cricketer. And I know a lot of the girls were studying at the same time or doing part-time jobs on top of playing cricket in the domestic structure in the UK. So I think the 100 really has enabled the girls, and Joe included, to genuinely have a full-time salary from cricket, and this is her job now, which is incredible. So not only does she obviously get the salary through the Sunrisers, but then also picks up that salary through whichever one of the 100 franchises she was playing for, which was the Trent Rockets last summer. So yeah, I think it's been huge, and I think for that perspective, I think she's all for it.
You mentioned the Sidemen just now as well. Is on sort of your YouTube side, is there anyone in particular who you sort of look to for influence and have been trying to maybe emulate in a sort of cricketing way, or is it just we'll do what we do and see what comes out?
Yeah. So what I love about the platform, and having watched more and more of it since I've become more invested in it, is actually the creativity that goes with the content and the storytelling as well, which I'm really trying to do. So things like where I've built the cricket bat in my dad's garage, things where I've bought the worst rated cricket bat on the internet. I really want to focus on the let's try and hook. And I think Max Vosh, you said this in one of his kind of podcasts that he was being interviewed on. It's kind of like, what hook can you get with the audience in those first kind of 10 seconds, which is your title thumbnail and that kind of opening line, that's then going to keep them engaged all the way through that video so that they actually find out what happens at the end. And I think that's where I want to sit. I want to create cricket YouTube. Hang on, how do I best describe this? Cricket YouTube content is what I want to create rather than exclusive cricket content, if that does that make sense? So I
Yes.
kind of difficult to explain it, but rather than oh, let's watch this guy bat for a bit, I want to create a story about that bat or that person or this challenge or whatever that might be. So that's kind of where I sit. And someone like Max is someone that I really admire his content. I think it's about as good as it gets on YouTube at the moment. And I think probably the fact that his subscriber base is growing as quick as what it is, probably a lot of people agree with me. So
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. I do love a few Max Vosh videos out there. Have you maybe tried to see if you can get him on the R Cricket channel? Maybe he could be in there, do a little net session with him, see what he's like.
yeah, so I've got ideas. I have got ideas, and I've got a list of creators that I'd love to work with, and I create a bit of a series about them and kind of see how they go in the cricket environment. And I know Max actually played cricket at a fairly decent level. He played at Lord's once for, do you know the Eton Harrow game? Mm. Which might not be the biggest shock in the world, but he did play in that game. So he's a decent cricketer, so I think he'll do pretty well.
That could be quite a cool series, I guess. You can sort of see, because I reckon there'd be probably quite a few YouTubers out there who might be a lot better than you'd almost realise with cricket. Like, I wouldn't have thought Max Voss should be that sort of that good a cricketer, probably a first team cricketer, I guess, at Eton or Harrow. So that's quite impressive. And it'd be interesting to see maybe how they'd all sort of compare, I guess.
I think so. And kind of circling back to the 100, it's kind of an attempt now that cricket might be seen a little bit cooler than what it was 3 years ago. So I think you stand a bit of a better chance of actually engaging some of the cool kind of demographics in society, some of the cool people in society to actually engage with the sport that a lot of people probably thought wasn't actually that great 3 years ago.
Well, I mean, a lot of footballers, or not a lot, but a few footballers were at the 100 this year. I mean, Harry Kane and Matt Doherty, I think, were at Lords. As was Beth Mead in Manchester at some point as well?
I think so, yeah.
Does just show that they are trying to find that sort of new lease of fans that they can try and draw out and try and bring into the game, I guess. You also started commentating for Northampton this year. You've had quite a good relationship with them. How did that all come about, and how have you found commentating for sort of good few hours of a day on what could be a fairly dull county game at times?
Yeah, so I made some content with them previously and just stayed in touch with the media manager there. And they caught me at a pretty opportune time that my calendar last year ended up looking pretty empty at a time. So they kind of offered me the first four championship games. And on the end of the first day, they kind of said, well, what are you doing for the rest of the summer? We'd kind of like you up here for the rest of the year. So I was like, well, okay, cool. My diary's empty. Let's do it. Let's fill it up and let's get on with it. But I'll be honest with you, to start with, it was quite surreal and quite daunting. I think everybody's really happy to chat about sports, whatever it might be, in the pub with their mate at the club, telling everybody the fact that they'd have played a better cover drive than Ollie Pope in this situation, or that free kick definitely should have gone to the left-hand post, or whatever that should be. Like, everybody's a decent player. But actually to kind of then sit down there with a microphone in front of you and go, oh, wow, I've actually got to talk about proper cricket now. It was a challenge. However, I loved it. It was so much fun. It was interesting actually spending time researching the teams and the players and the build up to the games, particularly in the county championship, which I'll hold my hand up to and say that I probably didn't really watch much of it in before this season or last season. So that was great fun actually to kind of learn about different players and that competition. And ultimately, all I wanted to do was kind of try and come across on the live stream and on commentary that I was actually like, I was enjoying it as much as what I was. And I hoped that my enjoyment then came across on the commentary. And then other people kind of thought, actually, this lad kind of sounds like he actually wants to be there. So I can probably get behind him.
What did you find the hardest part of commentating? On the other end, was there anything that came quite naturally?
The hardest part was the evening sessions of the county championship. Because they just go on and on and on and on. Like, it's, I think some of them you can get up to about 3 hours. And with the setup at Northants, there was only two commentators, and we'd have kind of half an hour as a lead and then half an hour as a secondary person. And as a secondary person, if you wanted to, you could get off and pop to the loo or grab a bottle of water or whatever. But it wasn't really fair for the person that you were commentating with to clear off for half an hour. So those evening sessions, they potentially lasted about 3 hours. So they were tough. And I reckon the most fun I had, the absolute standout was talking about Prithvi Shaw's double 100 against Somerset. That's one of the most surreal innings I think I've ever seen in my life. I know the One Day Cup has had its critics because of the players playing in other competitions, but not many people score List A double hundreds, do they? And I think Prithvi's got two of them now. It's just a ridiculous player.
He's not bad, isn't he? And to think he doesn't even get really that near the Indian side as well shows how strong they are. And I guess it's not very fair for the rest of the world for the next few decades, perhaps. As well, though, you've had so many other great experiences sort of with our cricket. Most recently, you went to Sri Lanka with the Barmy Army. How was that? How did that one come about as well?
That was that was a really, really strange couple of minutes on a Zoom call with a guy called Adam at the Barmy Army. We're talking about potentially doing some work with the Barmy Army this year. And almost out of the blue, Adam mentioned about this Fans World Cup and kind of said, well, what could you do in order for us to kind of promote us and kind of get you out there to come with us? So I was kind of like, okay, cool, that sounds great. So I sent an email back straight away and was like, well, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And they were like, yep, sounds great, come along with us. And I think from a club cricketer's perspective, that's got to be the coolest experience that I think you could ever kind of sign yourself up for. I said to Chris, who's the top dog at the Barmy Army at the moment, I said, this is a money can't buy experience that money can actually buy. Obviously, what's expensive is very subjective to different people at the moment. But when you think about, I think it was 5 days. So it was quite an intense period with long flights on either side. But return long haul flights, 5 nights accommodation in a really quality hotel, 3 meals a day sorted, playing kit, transfers, all the organization that goes into getting it sorted is cheap into start in comparison to the price. And that's before you even get to the point where you suddenly go, oh, I get to play cricket on an actual proper cricket ground and one of the coolest in the world as well.
Yeah, you do just basic, it seemed like you were just a professional cricketer for a few days, which was an unreal experience, I'm sure.
It was surreal. Police escorts from the hotel to the grounds. Like the welcome at the airport, because you see it on like the players' Instagram stories, don't you? When they turn up and they land and they're like, oh, what a welcome from the Rajasthan Royals family or whatever. And you think, oh, that looks kind of cool. I wonder what that would be like. And actually, this is exactly what happened. There was music, there was dancing, there was drinks, there was photographers, there was all sorts at the airport. And it really did set out to kind of give you that professional player experience. And I think it delivered. It delivered and some. It way exceeded my expectations of the event. And yeah, to think that you got to play on that ground. But admittedly, I didn't get to stay out there very long, but it was still a good fun experience to be able to play there.
Is that the coolest experience you think you've got through our cricket, or have there been others that have been equally amazing?
I think a lot of them, it's a bit of a pinch me moment, to be honest with you. The commentary side of it would be part of it as well. I think to be able to get to do that, the Sri Lanka one for sure. I know there's some things kind of in the pipelines for this year as well, which I think again are going to be very much kind of, I won't really believe it until I've actually been there, if that makes sense. Even the trip to Frankfurt the other day to go and get motion captured for this project was surreal. Just so interesting to see how things work. And yeah, honestly, any day that I'm kind of making content for our cricket or working in cricket is just such a privilege.
On a slightly different note, England are heading to India, where there's possibly going to be no content at the moment. Who knows who's hosting and who's going to be showing that one? What are your predictions for that for the Test series? Do you think that England do have a chance and will Bazball prevail?
So I tweeted out the other day and said I'd dye my hair like Ollie Robinson if England won the series. So I'm fairly confident that I think India are probably going to come out on top. I think they stand a much better chance of being competitive than what they were 4 years ago. I think following on from Rohit's comments in South Africa about the pitches, I think we can probably expect them to be pretty lively. And I don't have an issue with that at all. I think traveling to India, I think you should expect pitches that are going to be able to turn early on in a test match. That's the beauty of the fact that we play this sport all across the world. But I think the mindset of trying to hit those deliveries for fours and sixes rather than trying to survive for as long as possible and just waiting for that one on with your name on it, I think is going to be a much more interesting approach by England to go head to head with India. I know they picked four spinners, haven't they, for the first two tests, which read into that as to what you will. But I think they're probably, maybe not the Indian team, but I think the Indian fans will be a little bit wary of this England team. Very different, but obviously very successful in Pakistan. So yeah, I mean, who knows? One of these lads, all they've got to do is go out there for an hour and they could take a score batting the way they do. And actually India could be looking over their shoulders, knowing that they're then going to have to go and bat on this pitch that's doing all sorts as well. So yeah, it's exciting if we get to watch any of it.
Yeah, I know that will be the one big if, I guess. Do you think that, well, I mean, as you mentioned, England are in a better position this year. They have seemingly a better spinning options as well. I mean, Joe Root was a second spinner in one of the test matches last time out. Do you think that someone like Rian Ahmed might be able to come through and actually play a massive role in the series?
I think if England are going to do well, I think one of those three, I think they're going to have to. They're going to have a real breakout series. I think we know what we're going to get from Jack Leach now. I think he's quality. And I could sit here now and probably guess that he's going to have 20 odd wickets at the end of the series and that he's going to do brilliantly for England. One of Rayan, who I assume would be their first choice in order to kind of balance that team a little bit better, knowing that Stokes probably isn't going to be able to bowl, will be the first person to have that opportunity. And then Tom Hartley after that, and then probably Shoaib Bashir as the final kind of choice. But one of those guys, I think, is going to have to really have a breakout series for England to genuinely compete, because the pitches are going to turn and high quality spin is going to be so important. And as we've seen with some of those deliveries that Moeen managed to serve up to Virat Kohli, even some of the best players in the world are going to struggle against high quality spin. So, if it's a leg spinner, sign me up. That's going to throw me back to 2005 watching Warnie, and we can have Rayan Ahmed doing bits for us. I'm keen.
No, it should be hopefully a good series. And then finally, Dan, one of the sort of the biggest videos that got you, well, growth within the YouTube audience was backyard cricket, and was absolutely amazing. We'll give you a little bit of time to think about it, but I'd quite like to know if you were building your ultimate backyard six, a couple batters, couple bowlers, maybe a keeper, throw in an all-rounder if you can, who do you think would sort of be the best options on there, or maybe a sort of slightly spicy wicket with a bowling machine coming at them and a few sort of static fielders around the garden?
Okay. So six and out is a rule,
Six and
right?
out is definitely a rule, yeah.
Okay. So that rules out some of the lads that I was thinking of straight away. Because I think for pure fun, I think Butler, Maxwell, people like that would be great fun. However, I don't think I could trust them not to hit the ball over a fence. So I think we'd stack the batting. I think we'd have to go for Joe Root, because I could watch him bat all day. Steve Smith, I feel like he'd score runs everywhere. And I feel like he would bat long enough and have the temperament to not even think about hitting the ball over the fence, because he would just want to spend time out in the middle. So we'll definitely have those two. In terms of bowling, thing is, I don't necessarily think you need quality spin, but I do think if you're gonna serve it up on a real proper backyard pitch, then someone like Rashid Khan, I think, would be pretty handy. Maybe hitting kind of a few daisies or a dandelion, I think, would probably do quite a bit from it. Maybe a bit of Shaheen Shah Afridi, a bit of tall bounce, high pace, I think would probably, you imagine that one that lands halfway down and just scoots straight along the floor and hits you on the shoelaces. And who else? Have I got two more players to pick, have I?
Two more, yeah. Probably a keeper in there as well, possibly.
Keeper.
Or maybe an all-rounder.
So read into this as you will, but I'll take Ben Foulkes on a dodgy pitch. I think you need your best keeper, so we'll have Ben Foulkes behind the sticks. And then who do we go for an all-rounder? Have you got a six here as well? Have you preloaded with your
I
six?
didn't pre-think of a six. I think your six is looking pretty good at the moment.
Who would I have as an all-rounder? Maybe I would go Maxwell, just because I think it would be hilarious. Because there's bound to be. It's got to be good fun. Like, he's got to be able to bat long enough to be able to do something. And then I just think it would be hilarious when he reverse swept somebody over somebody's house or something like that. So let's have Maxwell in there for the middle, because Root and Smith can get all the runs. Maxwell can have some fun. Folks can do all the tidying up. And then we've got Shaheen and Rashid Khan for the bowling.
That would be a very, very dangerous six-man team, I think. I can't imagine many teams out there would ever want to come up against that. I mean, you could maybe have some look like a Darren Stevens could have been quite useful on a
Ooh.
green seamer, but I think that's not a bad six there at all. Thank you, Dan, so much for coming on the podcast as well. It's been great having you, and great hearing your insight on sort of cricket content and the England India series as well.
Mate, thanks for having me. Hopefully it's a good series. Hopefully we're not sat here in what, 2.5 months' time, 5-0 down and crying about England Test cricket again.
Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. Thank you all so much for listening, and make sure you head over and follow us on social media. It's at pitchside_podcast on Instagram, TobyReynolds10 on TikTok, and Toby_Reynolds10 on Twitter. Head over to the Sports Gazette website to read articles from all of our pundits and writers here at the Sports Gazette. Make sure you like the podcast and give it a rating, it really helps. And make sure to join us next time on Pitchside.